You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm your host, George Eliason. Welcome back. Today we have a special guest, Trevor Fitzgibbon. He's a founding member, a founder and owner of Silent Partner, Inc., which is a really, really special PR firm working in the United States. Now, Trevor has represented WikiLeaks, Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning on musicians, REM, Pearl Jam, Coldplay, Sting, and actors and actresses like Alyssa Milano. He's represented both progressive and conservative concerns alike. And in real terms, Trevor is routinely at ground zero for the events shaping our times. Welcome to the show, Trevor.
Hey, George, it's an honor to be with you. I consider you one of the greatest living journalists today. So thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for the kind words. Seriously, thank you. Now, I'd like to start off with WikiLeaks. How did you first become involved with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks?
When I started my firm in 2009, my first client was representing then Bradley Manning. And I ended up representing Manning via a combination of Glenn Greenwald, as well as an incredible woman named Jane Hampshire, who used to have a very, very progressive website, news website, but the legitimate progressive, not the sellout progressive. And it was called Fire Dog Lake. And she was a non-compromising supporter of whistleblowers, and she was phenomenal. And so, you know, the news had come out with Manning being captured and held in Syria in a cage. He was at a CIA black site for about 6 months before he was moved to Quantico in Virginia. He had an attorney, David Coombs, but he was getting vilified in the media and the press, and, you know, WikiLeaks, because he was an alleged source, WikiLeaks, you know, wasn't in a situation where they could provide PR for Manning. And I was not working with WikiLeaks at this time, but I was recruited to do the PR for Manning. And so I went down to Quantico, met with Manning and his attorney, her attorney, and got the agreement for Manning to represent her. And so I'd go down every weekend to Quantico, and this 5'2" soldier would come out with shackles and chains, with, you know, huge Marines, you know, 350 pound Marines right next to her. And I'd sit behind a glass, like a plastic glass window, and we would talk on the phone. And so I started representing Manning, there was a great journalist, Dylan Radigan, at the time on MSNBC of all places. He had a show, and I was able to, I'd go down there with one of Manning's friends, and so I'd be able to get this friend booked on Dylan Radigan's show on national cable news pretty much every week we went down. So we were getting the word out on Manning's treatment. Manning was being held in solitary confinement, forced to strip naked every night in front of all of the other prisoners. And we got this out there, and it really kind of boiled over. And that's when P.J. Crowley was caught on a Hillary Clinton's spokesperson. Clinton was Secretary of State at the time. P.J. Crowley was caught on a hot mic stating that he thought the military's treatment of Manning was stupid and counterproductive. And he was then forced to resign. And so from a pretty early start, I kind of got under the thumb, I think, of Hillary and the work we were doing. So eventually over time, you know, that was happening. And then all of a sudden, one of the board members of the group I had set up to support Manning, Michael Ratner, who's was my mentor and a true hero. He was the attorney who represented Julian and WikiLeaks in the U.S. And he's, you know, done, he did so much incredible work. He said, listen, I want to take you, Trevor, I want to take you to London to meet with Julian. He wants to meet you in the embassy because they need some PR. So that's how it kind of started.
Okay. You know,
it was based on my work I was doing for Manning at the time that they got to Julian, and that's how I got over.
Now, fast forward to today. Now, if Manning is extradited, he could face up to 175 years if convicted.
If Julian is.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, Julian.
Yes.
Does what options does the British Home Secretary Priti Patel have in terms of his extradition?
I don't know specifically what his options are. I know that she can decide to, you know, throw it out and halt the extradition, or she can move forward with it. I've got to tell you, I don't know if you're aware of this. I'm just bringing it up right now, but there's some breaking news, some really incredible news. There are two pieces of incredible news happening right now regarding WikiLeaks and Assange. And I think the first is the fact that Jen Robinson, who is one of Julian's attorneys and just a phenomenal individual person, tremendous integrity and a hell of an attorney, she filed with Privacy International a year or so ago a complaint that the UK had been spying on her and other attorneys inside the embassy, which is in violation of international law. And the UK government yesterday admitted to spying on Assange's lawyer in a case settlement. Wow. And it's a huge deal. The judge suggests that the CIA and that the UK received confidential private information. Now you've got the Council of Europe Commissioner for Human Rights has called on the UK government to not extradite Julian Assange. And it's really going to be incredible if they do, in light of the fact that this settlement has just occurred and the UK has admitted that it had violated the law. So you've got that happening, and then simultaneously you've got the fact that Mike Pompeo has now been subpoenaed by the Spanish courts for a plan, the CIA and the Trump administration's plan to assassinate Assange. And Yahoo News had broken that a while ago, as well as Stefania in Italy. And that's a huge deal. You know, you had Sheldon Adelson helping, you know, the mogul, very conservative Trump supporter who's now dead. He passed away. He had, Sheldon Adelson had hired this Spanish intelligence firm to spy on Assange inside the embassy and to work with Pompeo and the intelligence community of the United States on ways to kidnap Assange, assassinate him. They had all sorts of plans. And so that's now been made public. So if the UK, any country, any nation, legal system, any nation's legal system that has an ounce of integrity, there's no way in hell they're going to hand Assange over to the United States. But I think this deal is done. And I think it's been done for a long, long, long time. I think he's been held. I think this has been planned out for a long, long time. I think he's been held and silenced in order for this information operation that we are seeing around the world, from COVID to Ukraine, et cetera, for these things to take place. And I think that, as you have discussed in the past, the only real threat to the information operations that have been happening on a global scale was WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. And since he's been de facto silenced, they've largely stopped publishing anything. So the U.S. is going to have a huge job to do. Campaigners in the United States need to get their shit together, and we need to start building a campaign infrastructure to fight against his life imprisonment if he gets extradited here to the U.S.
Now, it's always easier to see things in hindsight. Let's go back to the spring and summer of 2016. Now, was beyond Chelsea Manning, was there anything else that Hillary Clinton was going after Assange for before the spring of 2016? Now, spring of 2016 is when WikiLeaks leaked the DNC emails. How did Julian Assange, WikiLeaks, and Hillary Clinton relate up to that point?
I don't believe had a real friendly relationship.
No. Well, that's what I'm saying. Can you explain the nature of it?
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand, on her watch, WikiLeaks released the State Department, the cable gate, the leaks of ambassadors and diplomats from around the world, and had released the collateral murder video that I think really flipped out the Clinton administration, or Hillary, of the American Apache helicopter gunning down innocent civilians, including two Reuters journalists. And that was, when WikiLeaks really made its big splash. And from the get-go, there's a video of her laughing, saying, "Why don't we just drone them to kill Assange?" So the relationship was horrific, and she wanted him gone by any means necessary. Here's the thing. Julian, the one thing I can tell you about his politics, he's anti-war. And I believe, I don't want to speak for him, and I believe, when you took a look at Hillary, you had, even in the election when she was running, she was more of a hawk than literally any of the Republican candidates that were fighting for the Republican nomination.
Oh, exactly.
For the presidency.
A little war demon.
Yeah. And so she was the threat. And the thing about, and this is what I'd say about regarding Trump too, the thing about the Clinton team, and I'd say Biden now as well, is that, Hillary or Biden may not spat out kind of insane rhetoric or tweets the way Donald would, the way Trump would. But the one thing that the Biden administration, the Clinton team had, is a very effective team. That's why, in my opinion, they were viewed as such a threat by WikiLeaks, because, they may not say crazy rhetoric, but they were very, very effective at implementing policy, whether it be, sanctions, overthrowing the government of Honduras, Ukraine with the Maidan, all over the world. They were very, very effective. And I think that's what really kind of put the fear into a lot of us, including WikiLeaks. And then I think with the emails, you see what was happening, and a guy like Sanders, who was a very populist, effective candidate, just getting screwed out of primary after primary, and then coming to learn that, the Clinton campaign and the DNC were coordinating and trying to take out Sanders. It was a big deal. And I think that's why WikiLeaks felt compelled to release those emails.
Now, after they did release him and they went full tilt on Assange, branded him as a Russian agent, the DNC contracted info ops teams, switch gears from Ukraine to the election, and went after Assange full tilt. If at that point, then tomorrow when you're on the show, we'll discuss a bit of why you weren't. But if you were working with Assange at that point, so spring, summer 2016, could you have done anything to protect him at that point?
Not alone. And I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I was removed from my ability to do that work at that time. But I think, you know, the information operation was so powerful and effective. And, you know, when you've got, you know, Brennan and Rogers from the NSA back briefing the New York Times and every major media outlet with bullshit, you know, with propaganda as part of the information op, saying that, you know, we even know which Russian agents did this, et cetera. It is incredibly difficult to counter that narrative. And, you know, while Julian was a hero to some, he had, you know, been blacklisted and vilified for a long, long time. And he was the perfect, the perfect foil for Hillary. And could generate strong public support. She could generate strong public support. So I think it would have been hard to counter it without any kind of, iconic journalists that commanded, or just individuals that commanded and held, you know, deep, deep respect, you know, like a Nelson Mandela or something like that. You know what I mean? But even then,
yeah, I do.
You know, they would have been taken out. You know, they would have been considered a Putin puppet. I mean, so many of us were deplatformed.
Right. And this is all, if you're out there and you don't know, WikiLeaks was not the first to publish the information. And, you know, that's kind of a jaw dropper. You know, if it's not personal, why are you singling out Julian Assange?
Can we talk a little bit more about that in regards to who was the very first to publish it?
The very first to publish it was a site called Open Secrets.
Right.
And Assange and WikiLeaks published it after that. It was within 24 hours, but WikiLeaks published it second, and they actually might have been third, to be honest with you. But those other sites or sites were never in the media. They were never accused of anything. They were never investigated for anything. They were never tried for anything. So it was simply singling out a very large target that wasn't in position to defend himself.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was. Now, I want to, as this goes forward, if the extradition goes through, and especially with the information that you provided, it may actually not, because this is a huge embarrassment for the British government, as well as the Home Office. So if the extradition does come through, do you have any plans on that you can share in terms of the coverage that you're going to give it from a publicity angle and things that people can get involved with?
I'm going to answer that, but if I could just say one thing that's going to be interesting is that if it was anybody but Assange, I could see them not doing it, but because of the embarrassment, as you discussed, but you're also dealing with somebody who doesn't have a home. Every government in the world wants to see him put away. Every government. Because they deem him as a threat of exposing secrets. And right. So at some point you have to wonder, I think that's what the U.S. is banking on. And so who knows? And in regards to, you know, if he's extradited, I am not officially or unofficially working with WikiLeaks right now. I think right now they're just so focused on what's going to happen. So I don't know what their plans are going to be. I can tell you that my clients are going to do everything in their power to support Assange and and to, you know, expose the hypocrisy and the corruption that has led to this point. You know, the American public, the West, doesn't like to look back at history. And I think that the elites that control information operations around the world, they know this. And so they move incredibly quickly, super fast. And, you know, we'll present the new scare tactic. Like, I'm sure the next pandemic is already put together, right? And they're just waiting for the right moment to introduce it. That'll be scarier right. than COVID. And it's all prepackaged stuff. So timing is everything. And I think this has all been decided. This has been decided for a long time. So I hope he doesn't get extradited. I think WikiLeaks attorneys have done phenomenal work. But I don't have high hopes.
Okay. Let's pick this up. We've got to go to a commercial break right now. Let's pick this up right after it. This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm your host, George Eliason, and we'll see you back in a few minutes.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
This hasn't been reported yet. It seems that the fallout from COVID, the fallout from all the pandemic measures, where they shut down the health services. They told us, you know, stay at home to save the NHS, save the health services. They basically shut down regular healthcare services to so many people. And even now, all of these months later, after these restrictions and all these various regulations have been eased off and lifted, that people are still struggling to get access to their GPs, to normal health care. It's like they shut it down and they don't want to open it up again, but they're sending you vaccine invitations every 5 minutes via SMS messaging. I mean, it's insane. Kevin's going to join us in the second hour to help break down this breaking story, and it's affecting people up in this part of the UK as well. We've got some firsthand counts there that can be sharing with us. That's obviously a battle that we're just going to be fighting and fighting and fighting.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The United States government has declared you an enemy of the state. For the first time in history, a foreign journalist has been charged under the U.S. Espionage Act for publishing truthful information about war crimes. If convicted, our right to free press is over. We have been led to despise the journalist charged by a massive smear campaign directed at both the left and the right, yet his record speaks for itself.
He's the only journalist to have never gotten it wrong.
The charges are opposed by all major human rights and free press organizations, but our once trusted news outlets have failed to inform us. It is not too late. We can demand the UK stop the extradition of journalist and publisher Julian Assange. We can demand the Department of Justice drop the charges. Call UK Home Secretary Priti Patel at 020-7219-3528 or call the Department of Justice at 202-514-2000. They are not after him. They're after us.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
Mainstream media censors, smears, and intimidates those telling the truth. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is TNT Radio. I'm your host, George Elias, and welcome back. Now, I've had the pleasure of speaking with Trevor Fitzgibbon of Silent Partner PR, and we're discussing the information operations and information war that's going on and has been going on across the world. Now, for those of you that are unsure of a definition of that, think of propaganda as a very passive method to change people's minds and positions on things. They feed you truths, half-truths, lies about different subjects, but you still have to pick it up, watch it, read it. Information operations is a control and condensing all media down to very specific narratives. So no matter what you look at, what you read, where you go, you're faced with that information in ways that you have to react to it. This type of information war is used for regime change, and it's very, very effective in the mode that's being used right now. And Trevor Fitzgibbon has had a lot of experience with it, both personally, which we'll discuss with him when he's on tomorrow, and professionally, with a lot of his clients being attacked by the people that are running this information war. Trevor, welcome back.
Thanks, George. Great to be here.
Now, we're discussing this in terms of Assange. How has this big push, and it was contracted by the DNC against Assange, against you, and anybody in support of Assange or the work he was doing, how has this affected your other clients?
It's hilarious. It's, you know, time has moved on. Now I have clients constant harassment. They get deplatformed, removed from Twitter and social media. They get banned. Close friends of mine are threatened directly, letters sent to their homes, from contractors that threaten them. It's relentless. They go after pretty much everyone around you. Now I also tend to work with, you know, people I really respect that have some edge and that are truth tellers. And, you know, Dr. Peter McCullough is, you know, one of those individuals as well, who is, you know, the most widely published peer reviewed COVID treating doctor for his field in the world. And, just eminent doctors such as McCullough that have been blacklisted and vilified because they dared to speak out and fight back against the information operation regarding COVID and the vaccine, and how it was not all it was cracked up to be. And the vaccine injured 13-year-old Maddie DeGuerey, and who can't walk after her second jab.
Her in a second.
Go ahead.
In terms of the media outlets and media platforms, journalists you represent, have any of them suffered deplatforming or defunding, and any type of harassment like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A number of journalists that, they either can't report on it, report on certain things, or they've been fired, they've been deplatformed. Yeah, a number of them. I mean, Glenn Greenwald, for example. You know, I mean, he was somebody who was my client, and we, when he and Ed released the Snowden docs, I was kind of their PR person to distribute them around the world, and you know, not like they needed any help. It's like all I had to do was duck. You know, Glenn, you know, he's no longer with The Intercept, which was the magazine, the online magazine news site that he co-founded with Laura Poitras and Jeremy Scahill. Right. And, you know, because they wouldn't publish his stories that he wanted to put out on Hunter Biden before the election. And, as it turns out, you know, he was accurate. And those who were questioning Hunter Biden and the laptop had every reason to report it. But you know, so he was forced out of his own publication. Now he operates through Substack.
It's a very, very serious situation when those things happen.
Absolutely.
Now you brought up Dr. Peter McCullough, and I wanted to get into COVID next, because I know you've been working with the vaccine injured patients like Maddie, and the doctors providing treatments instead of just vaccines, and you've been doing this a long time. Tell us about how you got involved with that.
Well, I got involved. I got involved because I got COVID and almost died. Mm-hmm. And I made it to Duke University. I was driving back from DC 2 Christmases ago. I went in and went to the hospital. I was overwhelmed and went in there, and they diagnosed me and with severe COVID and severe pneumonia, but you know, sent me away after about 45 minutes. And so I'm sitting there in a Red Roof Inn, chasing my last breath, literally feeling like I'm going to die. And a friend of mine called me, and who was a doctor, and asked if I was making it, you know, if I'm going to be okay. And I told him what happened. And he said, well, didn't they give you any treatment? And this was before the vaccine. And I said, no, they just sent me on my way. And he was livid. So he called up the head of Duke, and you know, the COVID unit over at Duke is exceptional. He called up the head of Duke and just lit into him and said, you know, talked to the head doctor at Duke, and he was just furious and said, this kid's dying right now. You need to send an ambulance to come pick him up, et cetera. Why didn't you give him any treatment? You've got all of these treatments sitting around there, just monoclonal antibodies sitting on your shelves. Why aren't you giving them anything? So they got me back. They put me in the ICU. I was there for 8 nights, gave me monoclonal antibodies and Peter McCullough's protocol. And it saved my life. And I, after 8 nights, I walked out of there, and I remember just sitting there in the hospital thinking to myself, you know, I'm going to survive. But like, when I think of the millions or hundreds of thousands, I don't know, but people who died because they weren't right. offered early treatment and they weren't given early treatment, I find that criminal. And so I wrote about it in Real Clear Politics, which is a good publication here in Washington. And it made its rounds. I think the headline was like, I nearly died of COVID, you know, early treatment or a medical advocate saved my life. But it was a medical advocate and the early treatment that saved my life. And Peter got a hold of that. And then I got a call from Peter, and he asked if I wanted to speak out on this. And I said, sure. And I said, but, you know, I also do PR. And it seems like you guys need PR. And he said, yes, we do. So one thing led to another. And so now I'm working with great groups like the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation and the Defeat the Mandates group. I'm working with some phenomenal directors from Canada that have just released a docuseries called Trucking for Freedom. And go to www.truckingforfreedom.com. Every 45 days, they'll have a new episode come out and about what happened in Canada. You know, and in Canada, they dealt with their own information op. Even before that convoy started, Trudeau had issued talking points to the media.
Go through this first. Okay, we'll get to Canada shortly.
I get excited.
I know you do. Now, the treatment that what you were treated with is the same protocol used on Donald Trump when he got COVID, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
We're pretty close to it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why these guys are so vilified. I mean, when you look at the coverage last night of the J6 show trial, whatever you want to call it, from really credible, top-notch journalists, Maggie Haberman, you know, at the New York Times, for example, the vitriol and the just pure hatred and lack of objectivity is stunning in regards to the hatred towards Trump. And I think one of the things that happened is that, you know, Trump was looking at these early treatments and embracing them. And so if you were a doctor and, you know, anything Trump did, the media would hate, right? So if you're a doctor supporting this stuff, you're going to get caught up in it. And I think that's one of the big things that happened.
Okay. Trevor, we're going to need to take another break and we'll pick this up again. Oh, we've got 4 minutes, so let's keep going. My apologies. Now, let me ask you this. There was a big push to illegalize ivermectin as a prescription for early treatment. Now, you're talking about, exactly. The drug itself was perfectly safe, has been used and as a safe intervention for a lot of different ailments for quite a long time now.
Yep.
Why do you think they jumped on it for COVID even before these vaccinations were available?
I mean, it's easy. It's cheap, and you know, I mean, the pharmaceutical companies are in business to make money, and the only way that you can, as I understand it, the only way that you can, if you're a pharmaceutical company or the FDA, the only way you can get fast track authorization for a vaccine is if the there is a common belief that there is no other cure, and that's why you need to fast track the vaccine. And so had these alternative treatments that were incredibly cheap, stuff like ivermectin, not monoclonal antibodies, it's more expensive, but ivermectin, vitamin C drips, you know, the whole different protocol. You know, you take the kitchen sink, you throw everything at it. Had this stuff shown to be effective, it would have been hard for big pharma to get that authorization fast track. So I think that's why ivermectin was blacklisted and to this day is blacklisted, you know, despite saving billions of lives around the world. And, you know, Dr. Pierre Corey, who we should have on your show, is really the leader when it comes to ivermectin. He's just done remarkable work. He's an incredible physician. And I'd love to hear him talk with you at some point if you'd like it.
He's also one of the most highly attacked physicians out there. Now, we've got a little over a minute before going to break. How did you hear about Maddie's story? Where did you come in on that?
I just heard of because of the work I was doing with the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, I met a lot of these vaccine injured, and they were blacklisted as well. They were being suppressed, what happened to them. And I thought Maddie was a perfect example, because she was, and still is, actually part of the Pfizer trial. And, you know, she became bedridden after her second jab of the Pfizer mm-hmm. trial, and still to this day cannot walk. And I met her, and just kind of, you meet these people and you want to fight for them, do everything you can to help them. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Oh, yeah, you're doing a good job on that. I mean, you pushed that pretty far against a lot of odds. After the break, I want to talk about the information operation, working against this, working against people like young Maddie, and trying to keep treatments away from people in a modern society today. I mean, what is this? In support of a political candidate for political reasons. So we're going to pick that up. Now, all of this, you really deserve a massive amount of kudos because of the work you've done. Peter McCullough probably would not. You really deserve a massive amount of kudos because of the work you've done. Peter McCullough probably would not have been able to get the platforms that he did. And thankfully he did, because it was he's very educational. And, you know, the places you were able to put him on, like Joe Rogan, etc. I think you did, and he did, a world of good with that.
Yeah, so, well, Rogan is great. But you know, look, I take no credit. I'm the guy behind the scenes that, you know, tries to make phone calls to get them placed and to get folks to put them on there. But it's really, it's all them. I mean, they've got the content. They're the ones doing the work. I'm just, I don't know. I'm just kind of behind the scenes.
Well, it's the behind the scenes that actually is getting their stories working. Now, we're going to go to break. We'll pick it up again afterwards. I want to go a little bit more on this line and then start talking about the Freedom Convoy. This is George Eliason with TNT Talk Radio, and I'll see you after the break.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
88-year-old Chuck Grassley is in the running for another six-year Senate term after winning the Iowa Senate Republican primary on the 7th of June. He will be 95 at the end of his term if re-elected in November. Grassley had a convincing win, gaining 73% of the vote versus challenger Jim Carlin's 27%. This will be a very disappointing result for Carlin, who fought an honourable campaign against Grassley. Carlin passionately fought against medical tyranny and slammed Grassley's record in supporting vaccine travel passports and the government agencies which helped to enforce vaccine mandates. He noted that Google and Big Tech were among Grassley's top 20 donors, and that Grassley voted with the Biden agenda 54% of the time. But for whatever reason, former President Donald Trump endorsed Grassley, not Carlin, and this likely sealed the result. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
I've got muscular dystrophy. That means my muscles are weak and it can be hard to breathe. During COVID-19, kids like me are at a greater risk, but the Muscular Dystrophy Association is here to help.
MDA is what ensures they receive critical medical care at one of over 150 care centers.
COVID-19 won't stop us.
Please visit helpmda.org.
There's no dispute. The jabs are not safe or effective. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm George Eliason. Welcome back. Okay, I'm with Trevor Fitzgibbon, and we're discussing information war and all of the different areas that's affecting. Now, all of this is being managed through government channels. And that's kind of what makes it crazy. With COVID, when you saw, you know, Joe Biden pushing all of this in terms of the vaccine, mandating vaccines, how difficult was it to get your clients' placements in media?
Well, I mean, you know, they were blacklisted. And to a large part were blacklisted. I think we had some real success, especially in Washington, D.C., after it was pretty extraordinary, actually, the press we received. A number of these organizations came together under the umbrella of Defeat the Mandates. And at the time, Washington, D.C. had a mandate. And, we held this massive march on the mall, or not on the mall, but on the mall at the Lincoln Memorial. And we must have had, 50,000 people against the mandates. And, the media immediately wanted to turn it into an anti-vax march. And, we were pushing hard and very adamant that this is not an anti. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I've been vaccinated my entire life. Most of the doctors have all been vaccinated, right? No one's an anti-vaxxer. I mean, there are some people, well, even like Dell, Big Tree, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., they're not anti-vaxxers. They want transparency and they want safe and effective vaccines. And, standing there, being able to go meet ABC Good Morning America at 6 a.m. before the march started at the Lincoln Memorial was one of the greatest, feelings of communal accomplishment that I think the movement from a PR perspective has felt in a long time. And to know that we were able to get this march to defeat the mandates on the Today Show, on even Jimmy Kimmel, reported on it. And of course he had to make fun of it, but the fact that we were able to break through with that, using the mandates as a way to get the message out, we were able to get Maddie DeGray, the 13-year-old, significant coverage. Right. It was great. The problem I've got and the issue is, you've got a whole new beat out there, right? And it's called disinformation. And so you have a lot of mainstream journalists that get sent to these to cover these events from USA Today, NBC, Nightly News, CBS Evening News, etc. They're not there to cover it in a legitimate way. They're there to cover it as disinformation. Or even if they believe, right? Like they meet Maddie DeGray and talk to the mother. They meet Ernest and talk to him, and his 15-year-old son died of myocarditis, a couple of days after he got the jab from an enlarged heart. They sit down and they understand, they start to believe it. But then, their producers and their editors, rather than take them as legitimate stories on their own, instead, because they're so wedded to this idea of extremism and disinformation, what they do is talk about how extremists and disinformation agents are using this to infiltrate it, right? And to push an anti-vax agenda. So,
yeah, I think, they did this with the Freedom Convoy too, which we'll pick that up tomorrow. But the fallback position always seems to be to link everything to QAnon and white supremacists and Donald Trump and little green men coming in. You must roll your eyes every time you hear any of that when it relates to your work.
There is today, as we speak, there is a professor from Michigan State University, Professor Dilley, who, has according to her CV, has at least applied for jobs working for the CIA and the FBI doing investigative work. you know, she's written this research paper where she's actually listing me as one of the four influencers, primary influencers of QAnon. And and I just, and she's putting my photo out there. And I mean, I'm like, are you, there is no evidence to suggest that I've ever supported anything like that. But so it's all part of their operation, right? When they came after me.
Yeah, well, if you know, can't get the facts, get them on the fiction.
Yeah, but yeah. You know, getting you into an academic publication is incredibly damaging, because then, you know, that's the kind of thing that'll go on Wikipedia and will be submitted as part of who this person is for generations. And so I'm fighting back and I'm suing. And
oh, that's,
you
know, great.
You got to sue to fight back against this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can now with the information ops now from Assange forward, you know, you've got a central nexus that is always wrapped around intel and, you know, I hate to just localize it so much because there are Republicans involved, but it's always Democratic agendas. Now, in 2016, all of this was being run through Ukraine and run back to the United States. Now, do you see the same trend with your clients? Is that where they're getting hit from? Proofreaders that are out there. You know, you've got groups like Propernot that 100%. Are, you know.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, you go on any social media platform and, you know, the social media platforms, you know, use, for example, whatever the CDC guidelines are, which, you know, the biggest financier of the CDC is Bill Gates, right? So these my clients, you know, suffer the same consequence where they get deplatformed left and right because they present alternative views. You know, one of the things that's just really stunning, though, and fascinating is that every election cycle with the DNC and the Democratic, the DCCC and their PACs, you know, spend millions of dollars demonizing big pharma when it comes to private drug plans or Medicare or Medicaid and all of that. Yet when it comes to like the vaccine, oh my God, it's like they can do no wrong. And there are just blatant examples of conflict of interest, corruption, Fox guarding the hen house kind of thing that are right there in plain view, and they just turn their back on it. And I, you know, I just kind of come to the conclusion that both sides, you know, it's not about principles. It's about raw power. And that's what they're seeking to control is as much power as they can. You know, when Julian first released Collateral Murder, Sean Hannity was calling Assange a terrorist and saying he should be assassinated. When WikiLeaks and Assange released the Clinton emails, Hillary Clinton is calling for Julian Assange to be droned. You know, I think that everything is viewed through the lens of partisanship today and seeking raw power. I tell this story. I used to do the PR for a big progressive group called MoveOn.org, who did some incredible work, really just groundbreaking work, and kind of created the small donor fundraising apparatus that Obama put on steroids. Really started with MoveOn and then Howard Dean, helping Howard Dean build that fundraising apparatus, and then Obama. But MoveOn, I remember spent, you know, we must have run $1 million campaign back when Bush was in office, going after the Bush administration on surveillance. There was that AT&T whistleblower.
Right.
Well, then fast forward to the Obama administration and Edward Snowden coming out with the disclosures where Obama had taken the surveillance operation under Obama, the NSA had put it on steroids. And to the extent where every man, woman, and child was being domestically spied on. And those same organizations that were holding Bush accountable wouldn't say a word.